Religion has been a fundamental yet complex part of the human experience, as well as a topic that can get very sensitive to discuss. Some of us were born into a set of beliefs that ended up aligning with our worldview. Conversely, others were born into a belief system that we may not identify with as much as time goes on. Sweden is a fairly agnostic country, and my family was no exception when I was growing up. I think this experience left me not fully understanding how important the role of religion played in other people's lives. But as the years went by, I've grown in my own spiritual journey, partially driven by my meditation practice, as well as having had the opportunity to visit many sacred religious sites around the world. Amar, on the other hand, was raised in a conservative and devout Muslim family in a town outside of Cairo in Egypt. After 10 years of being away from his home country, Amar has had to define and redefine what it meant to him to be a Muslim and how he chooses to practice his faith. And today, his relationship with his faith is evolving. Although he's got a deep longing for his roots, he realizes that he's in a place to create his own relationship with his beliefs. After years of having this conversation just amongst ourselves, we're excited to be sharing today with you some of our stories and perspectives on religion and God and the role that it played in our lives. Today, we're sitting down with our friend Rotana Tarabzuni, an artist, a singer, and an activist from Saudi Arabia. She grew up in a strict Muslim culture and has also struggled with her own religious identity. Rotana brings these struggles to light in her art and is an advocate for women that face similar struggles to hers. So join us today as we explore our religious upbringings and how we are learning to come to terms with the ever-changing landscape that is our spirituality.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the S Theory podcast in partnership with Headspace Studios. This is season two, and today we're talking about God.
Super chill.
Super chill.
Super chill.
We are joined today by my dear friend Rotana, who is the first Saudi Arabian woman that I've met. I've met a lot of Saudi men, but I had never met any woman from Saudi Arabia. And to meet a woman who's an artist... That would like completely blew my mind and made me so intrigued and interested in just getting to know you more and understanding your story and how you end up doing what you were doing.
Yeah. May I suggest?
Yes.
I just really love to start sessions like this with just taking a few deep breaths together.
Oh, that's great.
I open all important things with Surat al-Fatiha.
Let's do it.
It's scripture, which means like the opening.
That's a great idea.
The audience listening too, please join us.
Yeah, join us. Feel free to close your eyes if you'd like and just notice the surface underneath you that is supporting you. The buoyancy of the gravity that is connecting you to the core of the earth. And just sense that you are held. And when you're ready, we'll take three deep breaths in from your belly. Inhale. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. And now we begin.
Wow. I had never heard the Quran recited by a woman.
Really?
Yeah. In Islam, it's not known for women to be sharing their voice in a way that they would be, you know, reciting the Quran in front of other people. Yeah. Like, you know, they salt al mar'a awra.
Which means the musical quality of a woman's voice is to be covered as though they're like genitals or a part of your body that is like not to be seen. Yeah, we grew up very much hearing salt al mar'a awra. And I grew up in Saudi Arabia and I went to Saudi schools and I studied a very strict religious curriculum. And
so how is it different? Like how for each of you, what are the differences with the way that Islam is kind of applied in Egypt versus Saudi Arabia? Because you're both Sunni.
Yeah, we're both Sunni.
So what's the difference in
basically in Saudi Arabia, it's Sharia law is what governs their civil law. So it comes from like a very old-fashioned interpretation of the Quran that they just see applying exactly as is, without considering modern society.
And I would argue that it's like there is no as is when it comes to the Quran, and that's a big part of Islam that we've just completely forgotten. You know, ijtihad is a big part of Islam, and it's like what ijtihad means is to read the Quran and read the sayings of the Prophet. You do your research and then you sit and reside within your own heart and you decide. You decide where your soul needs to move, like how your soul moves towards the light.
That's part of the Quran?
It's called ijtihad. This is the practice. This is how we are supposed to engage with the Quran and the sayings of the Prophet. It's a very intimate relationship.
And where are you taught this?
In school.
In school, very early on.
And so this is like the same as like your math teacher also teaches you this?
Yeah, 100%. We had like 6 religion topics.
I feel like Saudi Arabia and Sweden are probably on the most opposite possible ends of the spectrum.
100%.
That's why I thought this is great. Like you both being in the same room to talk about God.
Because people might not know, but Sweden is the most agnostic country in the world, which means basically people just don't have an opinion.
Yeah, I mean, can we just like go around and each of us say like when you were growing up,
right?
What did God mean to you?
That's a great like, great
I
place
wanted,
to start.
That's where I wanted to start.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I think you should start.
Yeah, you start.
Wow, it's about to get real. When I was a kid, everything was built around God. Everything you did from the moment you woke up to the moment you went to sleep is for God, with God on your mind every second of the day. You're physically remembering Him 5 times by performing the prayers that I'm supposed to do as a Muslim. And for me, I come from a pretty religious family. So to people around, I was, you know, this good Muslim kid, but there was this, you know, other narrative going on in the background where due to a specific, you know, event and trauma that I went through, I started losing connection with the idea that I am a good kid who's worthy of love, who has a chance at redemption to be able to, you know, go to heaven. So very early on, my religious identity got attacked because of all these other religious teachings that told me things about what I went through and made me realize that this is like the worst thing that could happen. I had already ruled out the fact that there's like redemption from that.
So something happened to you or you did something?
Something happened to me.
And you believed that that was going to get you in a lot of trouble with God?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify.
So at some point, what I was doing to people around me and them seeing me like engaging with religion and prayer and all these things was something, but what I was going through internally and my own relationship with God was so confused and distorted. Yeah, what was your relationship with God?
Okay. Again, it's also not a simple answer. You know, I grew up in a relatively liberal household, although my mother is religious. But the schooling where I spent the majority of my life was incredibly religious and conservative and binary and restrictive. So on the one hand, there was like God was really this all-encompassing love. But also I was, you know, God to me was this big scary thing in the sky that required blind obedience and like paranoia. So I was scared of God, but I also loved God and I had like a really intimate relationship with God. But as I, you know, now I look back and reflect and it's like, it wasn't a love-based relationship. Hmm. The foundation of that relationship was fear. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of love there, but I was afraid. Mm-hmm. I was really afraid of getting ejected from my culture, of burning in hell, of, you know, the hell thing is massive. Yeah. It's massive. So, yeah, God was scary to me.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
What about you?
Well, mine is completely different. Like nothing to do with any of
that. I'm so excited to hear yours.
In my childhood, it was more so like the traditions, you know, celebrating Christmas and Easter and like, but there was nothing really religious about it. It was like, yeah, we're going to look for chocolates in the backyard for Easter.
But like, what did you think God was? Did your parents say anything to you about God?
Not really.
No.
I don't remember necessarily much of that. Yeah. But I remember like when I was a kid, if I was like really scared of something in school or something, I would like put my hands in a ball and
pray
in bed. I'd be like, please help me, you know.
And please God help me or just please help me?
Just, it's for a long time, I've pictured like ancient relatives looking out for me.
I love that.
And more so even now when my grandpa passed away 5 years ago.
Mm.
So I think of him specifically. In the past, it was just like a hypothetical ancestors. But it was my parents didn't really, you know, we'd go to church, but I hadn't had much exposure to it. Like really only from a practical perspective and cultural, but
when we first met, you weren't as connected to your spirituality. Like to you, I was spiritual because of my, you know, Muslim background and you were, but you always had such curiosity towards
absolutely
religion
yeah.
and towards the idea of God and fate and energy.
It's true. Over the years, definitely it's become more and more something that I think about and I'm approaching it from a way of understanding that there's a lot of amazing things you can get out of having a spiritual practice. And it's not something that I had at all growing up. So it's been amazing, like being able to explore it a little bit.
What do you think of when I say God? Like what's the, for all of us, what's the idea, the image, the concept?
So I don't have a definite, like God is blank. What I know more than anything now though, is like when you say, what do you think of when you think of God? I think of moments on stage where I'm in a room with people doing my ceremony and can feel spirit moving through me. That is God. Mm. So I have now, I'm in a very tender place of just like trusting the feeling of God and not needing to create a formation around that.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I can relate to the feeling part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when I meditate and it feels very real and very present is when that comes up.
Yeah.
It's like this feeling of acceptance and surrendering.
Yeah. And deep connection.
Peace. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I find God in the serendipities around me. Yeah. That's when I see God most prominent. Yes theory, I would say, has been like driven by like all these little mini miracles. And we see that there's a certain energy that we all acknowledge in our work and in our commitment of why we do what we do that is constantly repeated. So yeah, my connection with God has been mainly through these moments when I'm like, wow, I feel seen, I feel heard.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
So yeah, it's and again, it would have been really interesting to talk to like both of us 2 years ago and like capture just our torment with God and you know, what that was like. When I look back at what ended up happening with my father, and for the people who don't know, I ended up having a huge fallout because of me deciding to work on Yes Theory and how inherently problematic that was to our culture, our religion, our traditions. And seeing how God is in the middle of all of this, like, I'm like, what do you mean my dad is not going to talk to me because he thinks that that's how God is going to be happy? And I fully understand his perspective. Like,
can you explain to me? Because I don't understand. Like, why is yes theory insulting to God?
Because like very early on, he'll see me like do a video where I'm getting waxed. And right. I'm like screaming shirtless on camera. Like,
right. He also doesn't speak English. So yeah. He doesn't understand the context of these things. It sure. just looks...
It looks
reckless
like I'm
and careless.
Just a clown.
Yeah.
So like to him, all these decisions to end up like not going back to school and deciding to stay with these boys that are like God knows who they are or what they do. All of these things were just red flags that I'm going down the wrong path. And for him, a recorrection meant taking that stance of like, nope, I'm doing to you what Noah did with his son. Mm. The biblical story of like, the flood is there. Noah has, you know, warned his son multiple times, but at some point he's not responding, so he's left out. And I fully see how he, you know, arrives there. But there wasn't a whole lot of place for conversation, and that was my problem. Because you can't really discuss the word of God because it's a done deal. But I thought it didn't make any sense, and I didn't think that was God at all.
Oh, so you, okay, that's great. I mean, you were like, I don't believe what you believe.
Yeah. I had pure conviction that if my dad knew what I knew and had gone through the experience that I had gone through, he would have decided the same thing because of what yes theory can bring to the world and how right. I thought that was the most aligned thing with the message of peace and love that Islam wholeheartedly stands for.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back after this short break. So you've probably tried meditation before and it didn't work, right? Or maybe you felt like you were doing it wrong. If mental health is a part of your self-care plan this year, you owe it to yourself to try Headspace. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditation in an easy-to-use app. In my own experience, using Headspace now for 1,000 days straight, I feel much more at ease with a little minute daily stress. I feel more comfortable having difficult conversations that usually would give me a lot of anxiety, and I feel significantly more grateful after I meditate for being alive every single day. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. So go to headspace.com/yestheory. That's headspace.com/yestheory for a free month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now, so head to headspace.com/yestheory. And now, back to the episode.
You know what was funny? On the way here, I was trying to think of like some of the topics that I'm going to touch on. And it's wild. At some point, it hit me that I have to be very careful of what I say. Because if I say something that might seem that I'm denouncing God, it's literally a crime. Like, I could be prosecuted in Egypt just based on whatever that is going to come out of this podcast. And same with you, I believe.
Yeah.
Like, we can have our thoughts and our ideas, but there's almost feels like still that we can express it up to a certain extent.
I would like to say that for me, I feel that extent is gone because not gone. It's not gone. It's still present, but I don't know if you feel the same way, but for me personally, you know, I really relate to that experience of like having to choose your truth and your selfhood or God. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
yeah,
that's not a choice. God is in me. God comes with me. But that is the position that I was also put in from my family and culture. And all my biggest fears have come true. Everything that I was afraid was going to happen has happened. Every rejection, every loss has happened.
Can I dig deeper into that?
Sure. Yeah.
Because it was a specific situation that when I knew about, that's when I was like,
there's been multiple now.
I know. But
which one?
When you recited Quran as a part of a performance on stage.
Right.
Which is like, that's a big deal.
Yeah. And also like reframe. So this was at Forum Festival in 2019. And I like usually avoid talking about this at all costs. But here we are. I have a one-woman show that is more like a ceremony. It's very spiritual. And I opened my show with the Quran as I open this session, as I open everything that I do. And yeah, that went viral in a really like dangerous way in the Arab world. You know, as a woman, you're not allowed to recite the Quran or the call to prayer out loud. But talking about coming back to my heart, like this is something that I was doing because it was with the utmost humility and because it was so generative and expansive and it was an offering and a prayer and an opening and like, that's where it was coming from. But it was, yeah, it was very bad. And it was really like the rhetoric around it was like this abomination is a danger to our nation. Like it was really
in Saudi Arabia,
in the Arab world. I mean even Muslims here, you know, even Muslims all around the world were deeply offended and disgusted and angry. And as was, you know, my family. Like literally I have like shockwaves going through my body right now because it's like I'm not allowed to talk about my experience with my family. I love them so much, but it's so frustrating. And I think this is like, it's a product of the binary that we grew up with. It's like, your life isn't sovereign.
Yeah.
Your life belongs to this system.
Yeah.
God and your family, and we're all tethered, and it's really, you know? Yeah. And it's like, fuck, is that God?
That's a very, very exhausting way to live and to really be trying to be who you're meant to be, because you're a part of such a constricted system that just is afraid constantly.
And it's crazy because like in those moments, and I'm sure you've had these moments as well, on the one hand, I feel a light and a beating that is pulling me towards my mission. And it's unequivocal that this is my path and my soul's journey. And also, on the other side, I feel like the worst person in the world. Yeah. The most selfish, the most self-centered. I'm only doing this for attention. I'm a whore. Like all these things. Yeah. Both of these realities exist and I believe them wholeheartedly. Yeah. And that is the torment that I've lived with my whole life. And I would say just in the last 2 years, as I lost everything, did I start to become liberated of that. And that's why I say I'm in this tender place of like, I'm just paying attention to feelings now. Mm. What feels generative? What feels expansive? What feels like everyone is welcome? Because that's where God is. Mm-hmm. Come on, that's where God is.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah. Can't even imagine what that experience must have been. Because I know what it's been for you.
And I'm a man. Like it's a whole
and
other...
It's different.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is I was never like, I'm going to put this in my show because I want to redefine. I was just like, this is what my soul wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, that actually brings me to how you double down after that happened. And I feel like recently your work has been very much around women's connection to their sexuality in the Arab world, the erotic, and how that's a part of the divine feminine, all things that are so, so, so important for women in the Arab world to know, but also, God, so problematic for a woman to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like with that first experience or what you had to go through and navigate to reach clarity with your family or how you wanted to move forward with your life after that happened, it seems like you didn't hold back and you actually doubled down on being a champion for this message.
Yeah, and I will say that like I think a big part of it is having lost so much. It's so tragic, but there's a freedom in that because again, you're just like everyone's gone now. What do I believe? I hope this resonates with anybody that's listening. Anyone that has a purpose that goes against a system like they were born into. There are so many times where I'm like literally on the floor and sobbing and being like, I don't want to be this person.
Yeah.
I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be curious about sexuality. I don't want to find the intersection between God and sexuality. Like, rid me of this. And I can't. I cannot. And I like... Sorry, I get so emotional thinking about it, but like, yes, it's a choice that I've made, but I can't deny what my soul's longing. And so I've doubled down because I want to live a life of connection and expansion and joy, and I want to heal my lineage, and I believe that's how you heal it. And it's so hard because there is so much in my face saying, you are harming us. Mm-hmm. You are causing us harm.
Mm-hmm.
It's heavy.
What do you think led both of you to question the way that they were brought up?
I think when I started realizing that upholding this way of living that I'm expected to is virtually impossible, that's when I started
to question everything.
To question everything. Mm-hmm. And questioning everything is really scary.
Mm. Yeah.
It's...
because it's like questioning all the rules that were supposed to be true at 100%.
And there's a lot of safety.
Right.
And you have to take responsibility. Yeah. Like, that's a thing. It's like once you, it's very comfortable to be like, this is the system. Yeah. It's God said.
Yeah.
God said.
And you especially, like, especially for us and our generation, this, it makes it particularly hard because we came at this time where we end up having access to information in a way that has never happened before. And I think that's why those specific conflicts and identity crisis with ourselves, with our families, our culture, I think are the most intense right now, because people like us making these kinds of decisions and having these opportunities for the first time that are forcing us to redefine who we are. Mm. And that's why, I've been so passionate about making this episode, because I know that so many people are in that position, because it's not just for Muslims. It is an identity crisis that I think people in our generation are going through on some level. People who really want to figure out what's their soul's calling. This is at the forefront of what we have to deal with. Mm. That's why I'm glad that we could be discussing our experiences. I think it's just so important that we get to communicate that part of our journey, because it's not sunshine and rainbows, and it's affected both our journeys in the most like deepest, profound ways. It's affected Yes Theory's journey as a collective, and I just, you know, I want everybody out there to know who's going through something like this that you've got it. Mm-hmm. You're supported on your journey, and God, whatever that means to you, gets it
totally,
and sees you for who you are and what you want to bring to the world, and for that, just move with confidence and move with ease, be who you are and walk freely.
Mm-hmm. No matter how you were raised or what anyone around you believes, you have the right to evolve your faith and beliefs to what you feel most aligns with your values and worldview. Trust in yourself and commit to being a truth seeker. Walk freely and don't let any bounds keep you from doing what makes you feel truest to yourself. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Yes Theory Podcast, and we'll see you next week. I'm your host for this episode, Thomas Bragg. This episode was produced by Luke Himmelsbach and was edited and sound designed by Travis Loafman. The Yes Theory Podcast is produced by Luke Himmelsbach for Expedition Audio. From Headspace Studios, this show is produced by Danny Karasimi. Additional production help from Demira Pierre. The executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway.